Welcome back, guys. DGS, 3 minutes past 4 p.m. Every Tuesday at this time, we do the Think Tank, where we used to have a bunch of people on at once, but then during COVID, we limited it to two, and we've kind of stuck with that now. Today, we have our buddy Braxton Payne, who's been on many, many times. Jared Young, who we introduced you to a few weeks ago. He's the independent candidate for Senate. Recently debated Hawley and Lucas Kuntz, and got to see a little bit of that. It was very interesting, and he is with us. Good to see you both. Brax, how are you?
I'm doing great, Dave. Thanks for having me back.
You were weirding me out there for a while. 2 days in a row, I was having a meal and you walked by.
Well, I like to stalk you sometimes.
Yes,
well, it's when you're in my neighborhood.
Yeah, that was
appreciate
weird.
You visiting my neighborhood.
You're very welcome. Day two, I was like, okay.
What's going on?
Getting a little weird.
Yeah.
Jared, welcome back.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Tell me about the debate experience. I've never done it.
You know, I've never done it either. So it was a great experience and certainly appreciated the invitation and was glad that Senator Hawley showed up. So had the chance to talk about some substantive things. And of course, there were some fireworks between Mr. Hawley and Mr. Kuntz.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I am campaigning against those sort of fireworks. And so it was really nice juxtaposition for me to try to stand there in the middle of those two as the adult in the room. And I thought it worked out really nicely. But
yeah, that's
great
a good
experience.
I mean, it's a good physical position being in the middle of them, and it's a good intellectual position, I think, being in the middle of them. You know, I'm a centrist, as we've talked about, and I just hope that, and I care, but I don't care that much whether there's an R or a D or an I behind someone's name. I just want them to be sane.
Right.
I just want them to be normal. Like, how did we, I mean, I guess I know, but how did we just lose, how did we lose the thread of normal so seemingly quickly and just kind of abandoned it?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. One, that would mean obviously the explosion of social media and how we use it and also how we fundraise in our politics. So social media is easy. You know, you have a quick, you know, 10, 15 seconds. You can say something bombastic, then you get more followers, you get more of a following, then you're able to fundraise off of that. When Citizens United was able to be overturned by the Supreme Court, there's more money in our politics. Therefore, when there's money in something, there's more people that want to get involved and be a part of it. So therefore, that happens. And I've said this many times on this show, and I'll say it to anyone that will listen, partisan primaries are awful for our politics. You have, you know, very little amount of participation from both sides, and they get to pick who the nominee is. And in states where either blue or red, you're going to get the extreme on both sides. And so you're seeing in places that have either a ranked choice voting system or a top two jungle primary system like California or Alaska. And I use those two as examples because obviously they're pretty polar opposite politically. And you have a place like Alaska that has a Democratic, you know, a representative in Congress that, you know, she's pretty middle of the road. She's going to be in a fight for her life against the traditional Republican. She is a Democrat, but it's still moderate voters that are getting to choose that versus the primary voters. Same things in places like California. You're having places where there's two Republicans running in the general election. There's two Democrats running in the general election because that's what the voters wanted. So if we get rid of those types of things and have real election reform and campaign finance reform, I think we'll see a tampering down of it. I don't see really, frankly, an end in sight until that happens. Or maybe when Trump goes away, I could see a significant shift in our rhetoric.
Is it a pipe dream to take money out of politics?
No, I'll answer yes. Money in politics is like a river or any body of water. It's going to find a way through its cracks. It's going to continue to flow. They're going to find ways around it. Really, the only way you can really do it is if you go to federally financed or state financed elections, which I don't think there's an appetite for that among pretty much anyone right now that'll hit critical mass to pass anything.
Mm-hmm. Does it sound right to you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big supporter of the ranked choice voting and other innovative things that a lot of great people are working on to try to change this, because I don't think the system's going to self-correct. I think, you know, he mentioned social media. I think also cable news is a huge factor. People are just in these echo chambers, right? They're only listening to people that they agree with, and they live in their own factual universes. I'm just constantly shocked when I talk to friends, frankly, on both sides of the aisle, at kind of the facts that they're operating from, they're just so different. And it's really hard to have agreement and have productive discussion and to like each other when you're just not even agreeing on the very basic realities. But just one note on the ranked choice voting. Alaska has had some amazing results there. Ranked choice voting itself is on the ballot in Alaska and stands a real chance of being defeated. And so they might take a few steps backward in Alaska, depending on what happens there. So that's... there's a lot of forces arrayed against change.
Yeah. You know, those are good points. It's sad, but, you know, being grown-ups, it is what it is. This is unfair to do to you guys because we only have two segments, and it's a huge topic, but Marcellus Williams is facing execution in just a few hours. We talked about it earlier in the show, and we did our best, but I don't know a great deal about the case. I can't dive into the facts and the evidence and so forth. We had more a general death penalty discussion. We can do either one. We have two smart guys here. I just want to kind of pick your brains because it's proximate. It the 11th hour, almost literally, it's happening tonight unless the Supreme Court comes through or Governor Parson changes his mind. Your thoughts, Brad?
Yeah. So growing up, I grew up in St. Charles County. I grew up in a pretty conservative household. That's shifted drastically. My dad's a conservative. My mom's now a liberal. I mean, they're divorced. That's not the reason why. So I grew up in a conservative way of thinking and kind of always thinking the death penalty was just a way of life. And that's the strictest crime. I went to school. You know, started studying a lot about it. And then actually my senior thesis in college was on the death penalty and diving into the statistics of the death penalty and how it's, more black men are executed. The socioeconomic status is a huge, if you can have access to a good attorney. And also the technology continues to evolve. And those are the things I hit on in my thesis paper. And I think that's really important. So through that research, I was somebody that was not against the death penalty. And just through research, coming in with an unbiased mind, I came out of it against the death penalty personally. And the reasons for why I just stated it. I mean, there's so many flaws in our criminal justice system and something that is so definite in putting someone to death when technology does change. I mean, DNA is just obviously the big example, but we don't know what's going to be created in 20, 25 years that could exonerate somebody that we had already put to death. The other main point that I will say about the death penalty is that it's more expensive. It's not good for taxpayers. It costs, these are old numbers, but it would cost sometimes 4 to 5 times more to put someone to death than to keep them in prison without the availability of parole. So just as somebody that is a steward, I would like to say, I support, spending our tax dollars wisely. If that's your argument, then obviously I'm against the death penalty in that way as well.
Jared?
Opposed to the death penalty in theory, but I acknowledge all of the issues that Braxton brought up. I had a professor in law school that asked me the question once, or asked the class generally the question once, is it better for us to have 10 guilty men go free in order that one innocent man doesn't end up punished? And or is the reverse what we want, right? And generally our system is supposed to be set up so that 10 guilty men go free just so that we're always protecting, making sure nobody innocent gets punished unjustly. And my feeling on the death penalty is if we're going to do it, we better be dang sure that that person is guilty. And I know we think we have it set up that way, but over and over again, we end up having these cases where, suddenly some questions are raised, and especially people that were convicted, decades ago, when we didn't have the technology, like he mentioned, and when there was more racism than we see today in the justice system. Not saying there's not any now, but when those were the predominant issues, I think we would do well to take a hard look at those cases and just slow things down. And again, make sure we're dang sure before we take those
steps. One of the things that I look at too is I always try to think of certain things personally. If this happened to a loved one of mine, would I want the person that committed the crime to be punished by death? I continue to struggle with that. I think, you always want, vengeance or revenge for something like that. But I keep going back to the fact if this happened to my wife or my child or my mother or my dad, I don't think I would want that. I really don't. I would want that person to serve life in prison, and I would want them to pay for their sins and hopefully come out, not come out of prison or sit in prison and become a better person over the course of that time and think about it. So even the personal thing that weighs against me, because it is someone's loved one that was murdered, or the someone's loved one that is going to be put to death by the state.
Yeah, with this case in particular too, and I apologize to the audience that I don't know all of the details of the case. Chris and Amy have been covering it more than we have here in the DGS. But anytime the prosecuting attorney files a motion to vacate the conviction and the family of the victims don't want it to happen, that's a special circumstance to me. That's right. One of those, Jared, like you were talking about from law school, that there's something here. Now, Is it possible that he committed this heinous crime and stabbed this poor woman 43 times, left the knife in her neck, bleeding in the shower? Yes. He was convicted by a jury of his peers. He lost all of his appeals. But something just, I'm uncomfortable, right, and I'm not involved in this. And just as a citizen, I'm uncomfortable that this is going to happen tonight. And I typically am not. I'm not a let's go get them death penalty guy. Like, yeah, we took another one down. But when I hear that someone was put to death, it usually doesn't affect me the way this one is.
Yeah. Another question that caused me to think in law school, or really a theory that was posed by one of my professors, is that the purpose of the justice system is not necessarily to achieve truth, is to achieve finality, right? The system has to be set up in such a way so that when it's all said and done, we feel good about what happened. And this is a case where I think no one's going to feel good about what happened if they move forward with it.
Yeah.
And just the power that, you know, the governor has or the Supreme Court has in this, I don't envy their position either. Mm, and no. I think that's something that, you know, this is something that is going to weigh on a lot of us, and not something that's going to go away in any time in the near future.
It gives me extra respect for people like Jared and Governor Parson, regardless of their political stripe, who have the guts, which I don't, to step in and sit in a chair where I might have to make a decision like that one day. I mean, can you imagine that literally someone's life in your hands, the stroke of a pen and he lives, and no stroke of the pen and he dies? I mean,
yeah, that's not something I would personally ever want. And that's why I do the back end of politics, not run for office.
Welcome back, guys. 423 DGS. Kevin Wheeler is back tomorrow. For everyone who's been missing him, and for those of you who haven't, he's got to put up with it. So I've missed him. He's a good talker, man. He is my... If I'm the quarterback, he is my safety valve running back. Like, if I get in trouble, I just toss it to him and he talks for an hour. And I'm like, okay.
You love somebody that can fill time.
You do.
I work with somebody like that. I think he's on the show a lot, you know, Mike Kelly. Yes. He looks to fill some time.
Yeah, Nick says, like, there will be Michael Kelly days and non-Michael. We're having a Michael Kelly day.
Yeah, that's definitely that's a nice way to put it. That's for sure.
Jared, why don't you kind of reintroduce yourself to the DGS and KMOX audience and just take a couple minutes and make a pitch for yourself for Senate.
Yeah, so name's Jared Young, running for the U.S. Senate. I live in Southwest Missouri, father of six, former CEO, also a Harvard-trained attorney, and a few other things. But the whole reason I'm running as an independent is because I feel like we are at a stage where we're so just exhausted and frustrated and disgusted with the state of our politics, especially at a national level. We're just all so tired of the tone and the direction of our politics. And I reached a point where, you know, I could either keep crossing my fingers or I could step up and do something about it. And so obviously that's what I did. You know, taking on a Senate campaign as an independent is incredibly challenging, as everyone knows. But the appetite is there. Our polling and my interactions with voters consistently show the appetite is there. You know, our polling shows 43% of Missouri voters are independents and 70% are open to voting for a third party candidate or an independent candidate in this Senate race. The challenge is just with the budget that we have, you know, we have about $1 million. Our opponents have 10 to 20 to 30 million. Mm-hmm. You know, who knows where we'll get by the end of the campaign. The challenge is getting to, you know, 3 or 4 million voters and making sure they're aware that they have that viable third option in such a big race. And so that's what we keep working on.
So I've seen the ads, Hawley and Kuntz against each other. So I know their attack. What is their attack on you, or are they playing it where they're trying to ignore you and just hope that you go away?
Oh, they're just ignoring me. I'm just a gnat to them. Even if you watched the debate last week, I mean, I was standing right in between them, and I might as well have existed in their worlds, which was fine with me. You know, again, my whole argument is we are so sick of this. We're sick of this playbook, and they executed the playbook perfectly right across me. And so it was a perfect illustration of exactly what I'm talking about.
And it's a little microcosm.
And, you know, maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. But I'm sticking to that message because that's the whole reason I ran in the first place.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things, I'll just jump in. Sorry. You know, when people decide to run for office, you know, I've said this before, and you're obviously a great example of it. You're not doing it for yourself. You're doing it for a bigger cause. We talked in the first segment about, you know, polarization of our politics. And I'm seeing the difference in why people are running for office is not so much to serve the greater good, but it is to boost their ego. And I'm seeing that on both parties, no matter the size of the race, down to aldermatic, to, you know, coroner, all the way up to Congress and, you know, Senate. And so that's something that is important is, I believe, and my polling shows it too, is a lot of times we'll test, you know, does this person share your values? Does this person, is this somebody you would go to dinner with? You know, testing things like that. And a lot of times people are like, no, because they can see through the BS and they can see through that people are just not authentic. And it's hard to show yourself as being authentic in a 30-second commercial. So understanding that voters do need to do research, but the majority, which I would hope this would continue to stay of why people run for office, is to serve the people and to serve the greater good. And if we can encourage people to run for office that are like that,
yeah,
the temperament of our politics will definitely have a seismic shift.
How much, Brack, do you think Jared is hurt by not going the traditional route? I'm a mayor, now I'm a state rep, now I'm a state senator, now I'm the attorney general, and... Mm-hmm.
12 years ago, I think that matters. I think now it doesn't at all. It almost sometimes in certain cases helps people because they do not have a record. They don't have points of attack. They can only attack Jared on things he, or even Lucas Kuntz for the matter of things that he would do, not things that he has done. When you have a voting record, you know, when Josh Hawley votes against IVF or anything like that, he showed you who he is. When Donald Trump, appointed three Supreme Court justices that are pro-life, you can see who he is. Trust their actions. So a lot of times you're seeing people in politics, even at a local level, that have no experience. Now when it comes to governing, I can see that as more of a little bit of a problem because they don't understand how government works and how bills become laws and how you get a speed bump in your in your neighborhood. And that sometimes can really slow down things.
Yeah. Jared, 1 minute left. Use it any way you want.
You know, I am told sometimes during this campaign that, Jared, you're too nice to be a politician, right? And I just feel like, what a shame that is.
What a shame.
Why? How have we gotten to this place? And I've probably said that myself before, so I'm not saying that that's a bad thing for people to say, but it's a shame that we've reached the point where we expect our politicians to be bombastic jerks. And I just think people are longing for a dose of reasonableness, and that's what I'm here to offer them. You know, I have the experience to be an effective problem solver that can sit down and discuss things rationally and reasonably with people from all different backgrounds. I've done it my whole career. And that's what I plan and hope to do in the Senate.
How do people support you?
Go to votejaredyoung.com. That's where you can find out about me. Also on social media, it's at votejaredyoung. Obviously, would love your donation, but more importantly, would love your vote in November.
Thank you, boys.
Thank you.